resemble me too much. Early in 1913, it seemed to Thomas that the long-hoped-for saviour could be the gifted, kindly Godwin Baines. Such a person would indeed emerge to help him out of his despair that year. But he would not be a doctor.
And tomorrow, Edward Thomas finally meets Robert Frost in the second episode of Now All Roads Lead to France by Matthew Hollis. The reader was Tobias Menzies. It was abridged by Richard Hamilton and produced by Emma Harding.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 3 o'clock and time for drama. Kate and Merton need money. Millie needs love. How far will they go to get what they want? In our Henry James classic in a moment. Then Mel Gedroych meets Dylan, the three-banded armadillo. We'll discover that an armadillo is warm to the touch and that it walks like a dancer. Amazing what you can find out from a visit to Edinburgh Zoo. Meet Dylan on the 4 o'clock show. Now on 4 Extra, we begin a three-part adaptation of Henry James's The Wings of the Dove, dramatised by Linda Marshall Griffiths.
I wait. You keep me waiting. I hate this room. Shabby sofa. Yellow stain of those prints. My face in the mirror. I'll go. I can feel you upstairs knowing I'm waiting and still. Papa, I give you up. It's as if the street is in this room, and this room and the 100 more worse than this in the street. This is the failure of everything, isn't it, Papa? Honor, fortune. This hat is wrong. I'm altogether in black, even my eyes, black. I won't give up. If I am the last word of this broken sentence of a family, I will have some sort of meaning. I'm glad you're so much better, Papa.
I'm not better. It's why I sent for you, so you may see me as I am.
I always see you as you are, Papa. Beautiful as ever. You look lovely.
That hat's wrong.
I know.
The feather. It's overdone.
How long have you had these rooms?
You are handsome.
And that gives you pleasure?
No, one of my very few.
I'm willing to go with you, Papa. Things have happened and I've only waited for seeing you till I could be quite sure. I am sure. I'll go with you.
Go with me where?
Anywhere. Here.
I don't believe you've made your mind up to that.
I could live with you even if I don't understand how you get on.
I don't get on.
You're flourishing, Papa.
Oh, do you throw it up at me again that I've not done away with myself?
Well, you know Mama had less to leave than she feared. It makes about 200 a year for Mary and 2 for me, but I give 100 to her and the children.
You weak thing.
The other 100 would do something for you and me together.
And what would do the rest?
Can you yourself do nothing?
I don't see what has so suddenly wound you up.
Aunt Maud has made me a proposal. She says it is time we should understand each other.
I can quite imagine what she means.
Can you?
She means she'll do for you handsomely if you break off relations with me.
So here I am, Papa.
Do you really suppose me in a position to justify you throwing yourself upon me?
You live. You flourish. You bloom.
Oh, you've always hated me.
Her condition is that I shall have absolutely nothing to do with you. Not speak or write. You should simply cease to exist.
And her promises? I'm a poor old ruin of a dad. But I'm not quite the old ruin not to get something.
Oh, I think her idea is I should get a great deal.
I put it to your conscience. It's an admirable opportunity. And moreover, one for which you've really to thank me.
I don't see what my conscience has got to do with it.
I'm not talking only about what you might do for me, but what you might do with me. Use me. I'm still good, well, for a lot of things. There's, in fact, a coach and four to be got out of me. You've really settled to give away half your little inheritance?
No, I haven't settled anything.
But you mean practically to let Marion collar it?
Is it your idea that I should give it to you?
Far from it.
If I were to sign my aunt's agreement, I would carry it out to the letter.
Of course. The only way to play the game is to play it. There's no limit to what your aunt can do for you.
You mean in the way of marrying me?
Marry properly.
And then?
And then? Well, we will talk.
Goodbye, Papa. It may be for a long time.
Why not call it forever?
I don't know what you're like!
No more do I, my dear. I've spent my life trying in vain to discover. Like nothing. More's the pity. If there had been many of us and we could have found each other, there's no knowing what we mightn't have done. But it doesn't matter now.
I wish there was someone here that could serve as a witness that I have put to you that I am ready to come.
Would you like me to call the landlady?
There's only one word you need speak.
If I don't strike you as having spoken it, our time has been singularly wasted. Now, if you can't pull yourself together, I'll take you in hand, put you into a cab, and deliver you to Lancaster Gate myself.
But everything's changed, Papa. There's a new difficulty. Please don't turn me away. I should have you, and it would be for my benefit as well.
Oh. The problem is you're in love. And your aunt knows. And for reasons, I'm sure, perfect, hates and opposes it. Oh, I'm sorry for her. Poor deluded woman, if she builds on you. Go, please.
I shall go my way as I see my way.
Your way, then, will be to marry some blackguard without a penny?
He has every disposition to make the best of you.
Then he must be an ass. I trust your aunt with my eyes closed, and you must take it that I won't hear of anyone she won't. If you really should defy us...
Well,
my sweet child, I think that, reduced to insignificance as you may fondly believe me, I should not be quite without some way of making you regret it.
If I don't do it, it won't be because I'm afraid of you.
If you don't do it, you may be quite as brave as you like.
Then you'll do nothing for me.
I never pretend to do more than my duty. I've given you the best and clearest advice. If it displeases you, go and see Marion to be consoled.
That's what you can't forgive me, isn't it? That I divided my scant share of our mother's money with her and your grandchildren. Not you! Dirty, have you done with your dinner?
Let them go. Lottie, go up.
Put up the window a bit.
Yes, the lingering odour of boiled food. You're not used to that anymore. Do what you like. You always do.
What does that mean?
It means that how can you think about anything but this horrid way we are situated?
It seems to me I give you sufficient proof of how much I think of you.
Well, your own business is your own business. And you may say there's no one less in a position than I to preach to you. This poor, poverty-stricken, red-faced widow. I'm getting fat, you know.
You're not.
Do you really consider you've a right to throw yourself away?
I'm not conscious, I can assure you, of the least disposition to throw myself anywhere.
Oh, so you don't feel like you'd like to marry Merton Densham?
I don't know what makes you talk of him.
Because you never do, in spite of what I know. That's what makes me think of him. Or rather, it makes me think of you. If you don't know at this time what I hope for you, what I dream of... If I name him, I suppose it's because I'm afraid of him. He fills me with terror. In fact, I dislike him as much as I dread him.
And yet you don't think it dangerous to abuse him to me?
Yes, I do think it's dangerous. I admit I shouldn't speak of him at all. But I want you to know...
Know what?
That it would be the worst thing that has happened to us yet.
What, because he hasn't got any money?
Yes, for one thing, and I don't believe he'll ever get it. You must have it. You shall have it.
What, to give to you?
Have it first, then we shall see.
You live in a world of vain thoughts, Marion.
Do I? Look how successfully your dress is done. All the trimmings and lace, do they give you pleasure? Do they speak to you? I thought so. I'm talking of no man but Aunt Maud's man, of doing nothing but what she wants. I don't believe in Merton Densher, no, but I believe in her.
That's what Papa said.
He came to you?
No, I went to him. Oh, don't get all injured. I'm not going. He won't have me.
I would not receive you, I can assure you.
He wouldn't take me.
At least he shows his sharpness.
He said he'd curse me if I leave Aunt Maud.
So you won't. You won't, of course. It's your duty.
Yes. Papa's immense on duty.
Poor old Papa.
Anyway, who do you mean by Aunt Maud's man?
Well, Lord Mark, of course.
How does such stuff in this hole get to you?
And who keeps us, me and my poor children, in this hole?
I'm going.
Don't forget to kiss the children. You forgot last time. They cried.
I imagine myself in a garden. A walled garden. No way out. I see a ladder against the wall. So I climb it to see what the world looks like outside of all this. And as I reach the top, I find myself face to face with a man who had, at the same moment, climbed up from his world with the same calculation. I can't stop looking at him. I cannot climb down. He is other than us. Than me.
This is Sloane Square, Sloane Square!
Watch the doors, miss.
I feel him before I see him. The day and hour are darkness. May I sit here? 6 other people. He is on the other bench at the furthest angle. But it is like we meet in some bright stretch of desert.
I knew you'd come. I expected you. This moment. Now.
Surf, Kensington!
This is his stop. He doesn't get off.
And already we're much further on than we were. Each link between High Street to Notting Hill Gate takes us further, deeper.
Mind the doors!
And we're alone.
May I?
He's next to me.
I can't speak. I say nothing. Rush forward.
Bayswater, Queen's Park, find the gap.
I have to get off.
I'll come with you.
We've been seen, you know.
Why should we not be seen?
My aunt's going to write to you. I know what she'll say.
What will she say?
She has this idea.
What? That I'm not good enough for you?
Not good enough for her.
And that's necessary?
She's behaved extraordinarily.
And so have we.
She's been giving us rope. If you see her, you must know where you are.
I always know that. But it's where you are that concerns me.
That look. Your look is what I can never get enough of. I take it home with me. You have given me something no one has ever given me.
Wet walks in the park.
Your mind. So rich and mysterious and strong.
I suppose I have the potential for recognition of ideas, but can you coin that into gold?
You live by the mind.
And you have a mind to live, and that seems to me to be so much more.
We're here. We have each other. That's everything.
That's what we don't have. I can feel your aunt watching us from the window of Lancaster Gate. We're out of sight, but I feel her. I don't believe I shall ever be rich.
You're a writer.
Exactly.
You could make a fortune. Oh,
but never a living. Would you marry me? Like this, tomorrow.
Let's wait till you've seen my aunt.
And that's adoring.
She makes me afraid I might do something base.
What? Like sacrifice me?
I shall sacrifice nobody and nothing. And that's just my situation, that I want and that I shall try for everything. I never asked her for anything. When our troubles were at the worst, I never appealed to her. She fixed upon me with her wonderful gilded claws.
You make her sound like a vulture.
I was her choice.
What she must see in you?
Everything. And there it is.
Yes, there it is. And you want me to square it with her?
See her.
And grovel.
Do what you like.
I will do as you like, my love. I will help you to the utmost of my power to the rest of this day and the next as you turn your beautiful back away from me. I wait. You keep me waiting. I hate this room. All your massive, florid furniture, your signs and symbols. I won't grovel. I'm not ready for that. I'll be patient, ridiculous, reasonable, unreasonable, diplomatic. I can feel you upstairs knowing I'm waiting, keeping me waiting. Yes, I have your message. I never dreamed of a world so fringed and scalloped. So cruel, these heavy horrors. And what do I have to fall back on? I love the girl. I love the girl. And I walk the desert of my own poverty.
My dear, I do apologize for keeping you waiting.
Don't worry. I have quite taken the hint.
I just wanted us to understand each other.
I'm not afraid to understand.
I have gone a long way with my niece, and I am ready to go much further. I don't care what you repeat to her, and at any rate, there's nothing she doesn't already know. I don't say this for her, I say it for you.
Thank you.
I like you. I know you are good. You are, by my measure, good enough. Good enough, that is, to give up my niece and go your way in peace. But then I have to wonder, are you good enough by your own measure to do such a thing?
It might be my doom to prove so.
She's the finest possible creature. Of course, you flatter yourself, you know it. But I know it a great deal better yet. I don't say it because she's my niece. That's nothing to me. I could have 50 nieces, and I wouldn't have brought one of them to this place if I hadn't found her to my taste. Kate's presence I marked early. Kate's presence, unluckily for you, is everything I could possibly wish. I've been keeping it for the comfort of my declining years. I've been saving it up and letting it, as you say, appreciate. You may judge whether now it has begun to pay, am I likely to consent to anything but the highest bidder? I can do the best for her, and I've my idea of the best.
And that idea of the best isn't me.
I didn't ask you to come to hear what it isn't. I asked you to come to hear what it is.
And that's very great indeed.
I want to see her high. High up and in the light.
A duke, of course. And you naturally want to smooth away any hitch.
I want her to marry a great man.
Of course, I'm aware of how little I can answer to any fond, proud dream. You've a view, a grand one, into which I enter. I thoroughly understand what I'm not, and I thank you for not reminding me of it in any rougher way.
You don't really matter, I believe, so much as you think. I'm not going to make you a martyr by banishing you. Your performances with Kate in the park are ridiculous as far as they're meant as consideration for me. I would much rather see you myself as you seem to be, my dear young man. Delightful. I place you in the presence of my plan with which you are incompatible. Come then as near it as you like. Walk all around it. Don't be afraid you'll hurt it. You can do it no harm. Live on with it before you.
She doesn't think I'm dangerous. That's what she wants me to know.
Is that what she said?
You're to marry a great man.
And what is a great man?
I have to go away.
You're not letting her.
No, of course not. Of course not. The paper wants me to go to America. 15 or 20 weeks, a series of letters, strictly social points of view. I'm not in a position to refuse anything.
Yet.
I'm surprised they want me.
Of course they want
me. They don't want the kind of twaddle I just can't do. My tune, as I am.
You're wonderful.
It's all to be done by June. I asked for a day so I could talk to you. I'm to leave straight away.
We must go.
Is it that easy?
We're bound together.
It makes me even less of a threat.
Aunt Maud says you can still see me.
Yes, of course. I can come to Lancaster Gate.
Well, that's everything.
She's sure of my want of money, and that gives her time. She believes in my having a certain amount of delicacy in my wishing to better my state before I put the pistol to your head. She won't spoil her chance by treating me badly. Strange as it may seem, I think she rather likes me. She doesn't disparage intellect and culture. In fact, she would like them associated with her name. I am sure it is quite a pang for her that I am so desirable and yet so impossible.
What an immense affair she must think me.
More than you can imagine.
She'll be relieved you're going away.
Well, since she builds on the gradual process of your alienation, she may take the view that it constantly requires me. It's in my exile that it may languish. What?
I engage myself to you forever. I pledge you every drop of my life.
And I you. All that I am, all that I have.
This was my mother's. Undo it.
You're sure?
Yes. Take it. And what of yours?
My ring. I never take it off. It may not come off. Here. It's yours. I'm yours.
We belong to each other. No one else.
Your aunt may not agree.
She asked for no promise. So we have not done anything she has not asked us. We say nothing of our engagement.
Until the hour she finds someone.
She must take her risks, and she surely understands them. What we shall have gained is time. And so, for that matter, will she.
Time's everything. And bliss.
Of our secret.
Of us. Of our being as we are.
Beefsteak. Oyster pie and spaghetti. Everything boiled, of course. My cabin is not as small as I expected. I have a small desk at which I am sitting at this moment. But often I stand on deck alone. It's cold. One cannot understand the cold until it's completely taken one. It makes you feel each breath and the throb of your heart. I saw an orca looking up at me as if I were the spectacle, and then it slid into the water and lifted its great tail. like everything fitted. I never felt so alive.
My love, how far you are from me. I'm alone. I'm not afraid of that. That's always been the case. I'm bored. Even books are words. I'm waiting for something to happen. Oh, I don't know if it's the London weather, but everything fades. It's like a photograph, how quickly everything dries and is held in its place.
New York is a big place and rapidly becoming an interesting one. It seems so poetic and tender. I'm walking everywhere. London's so big and black and actual. It's a brute of a place next to this.
Lord Mark. This room is ferocious, Maud. Too much red. I'm afraid I'm about to be devoured.
Yes, I like that about it.
You look well.
I look the same as I ever did, my dear.
Yes, you're always the same. That's what I like about you. Quite wonderful.
Yes, I think I am.
Always doing something for your friends.
You make it sound like a crime.
Praise.
I don't deserve it. It is myself I am mostly doing things for.
Exactly. But yourself includes so many other selves. I never knew a life so touched by others.
What is one's life? Its appearance? The moments it plays?
Wouldn't you call life your ambitions?
I wonder if she understands that.
Oh, I believe she understands it very well. She is perfect.
Would you entertain her if she were not?
No.
Exactly.
Where is she?
Writing letters.
She's not easily understood, which makes her more interesting. What do you want to do with her?
What do you want to do with her? Oh, here she is.
Lord Mark.
Miss Croy.
Will you come and drink coffee and talk to me? I'm horribly bored.
Well, I cannot promise to cure you. Maud tells me I'm indolent.
You are indolent. It is your worst fault.
Maybe your best.
Thank you, Kate. Someone at last who understands me.
I am like an actor on a stage. Each day, I put on my costumes, reset my face. I never miss my mark or forget a line. I go over the same script. I can play comic, ironic. I am pitch perfect. I know how to turn my head beautifully. I know all my best sides. And all the time, I long for my dressing room, where I can strip back these adornments and lay out my heart.
No letters?
Nothing, miss.
8 weeks. Your silence becomes like a shrug that I keep trying to shake off. Where are you, my love?
You still not heard from Mr. Densher? You may leave your letters on the hall table, you know, Kate. You do not have to go out to post them.
I like the walk.
Strange enough, I've had rather an intriguing letter from an American. I suppose that's what she meant to do.
What do you mean?
Oh, an old school friend. Susan Stringham. She made rather a meagre marriage, and I lost her after that.
Lost her?
Well, you know. Let her go. She lives in Boston, a provincial widow. She writes stories for ladies' magazines. I almost pity her.
She's not coming to visit, is she?
She may have something to show.
Oh, don't make me meet her.
She is travelling with a princess. A remarkable thing from New York. She is a striking apparition, apparently. Hair exceptionally red, clothes remarkably black, even for mourning. It's a New York history, loss of parents, brothers, the lot. And beyond everything, by most accounts, a mass of money so piled on the girl's back. Alone, stricken, rich, but most particularly strange. It may be you can give this young New York princess something she craves, Kate.
Me?
Susie knows I can serve up the whole of London on a platter. This princess may be most rare, and therefore a jewel, like you, my darling. We must set you together and see if we can make you dazzle.
The air of the place, the pitch, so sharp, so deep. The faces, the hands, the jewels, sounds of words, of names, the shapes of the forks, the flowers, the servants, the walls. We are all touches in a painting. I am in a state of vibration. It's too sharp.
I'm afraid I can't really clear up her situation. There's no such thing in London today as saying where anyone is. Everyone is everywhere. Nobody is anywhere. I should be put to, yes, frankly, to give a name of any sort to Maud Lauder's set. Is it a set at all, or is it not? And are there such things as sets anymore? Is there anything but groping and pawing?
You throw up a great many questions, Lord Mark. Do you give them up for too much knowledge?
Maud Lauder is an extraordinary woman. The more extraordinary, the more one knows her.
And her niece, Miss Croy. It seems to me that English girls have special beauty, particularly in evening dress.
Yes. Kate is tremendously good-looking.
And?
And here's the soup. Asparagus. Horribly insipid.
Is it an Englishman's special gift to conceal more than they advertise?
Is that your experience of Englishmen so far?
It is. The few I've met. Are you a young man who is old, or an old man who is young? You're extremely clever, aren't you?
I'm extremely frivolous.
You don't have a word for you in America. Isn't it the aristocracy?
How did you recognize me?
Your indifference. Did I say that out loud? It's the way you crumb up your bread. And you have recognized me. You have been to my country and threshed us all out. There's nothing for me to explain or brag about. You have the whole picture, don't you? So can you then tell me why I am so different from that girl across the table? Or why she is so different from me?
Well, of course, we recognize you Americans, how you work. See you. You're already worrying what you should say to the thick-necked, large and literal gentleman sitting to your left. You poor creatures, the burdens you take on.
Well, you know my desire to be lovely all round is justly founded on the lovely way Mrs. Lauder met us. It's as if she really cared for us, and it's a magnificent fidelity to Susie.
Well, isn't your Susie's fidelity equally magnificent?
Why, it isn't as if she's got anything to give.
Apart from you.
Me? Aren't I rather a poor present? I don't feel like I've been given.
You've been shown. And if our friend jumps at you, it comes to the same thing. It is Mrs. Lauder now who gets the benefit. Look round the table. You're being from top to bottom jumped at.
American, you know.
Made up altogether.
A princess.
New York.
Is there such a thing?
Well, we started out in a grand place just off Fifth Avenue. It was the most fashionable.
She is all that you say, Susie.
I can't promise to completely understand her yet.
Well, that's what makes her interesting.
Sometimes she frightens me.
My niece is the same.
She went for a walk in the Alps. It was getting late. I went after. The vastness of those mountains, that unending sky. There was a vertiginous drop. At the edge of all of it, she stood. I thought she was going to leap. It was as if she held herself back. as if she knew herself reserved for a more complicated passage. It came like a revelation to me that there was before me something so precious, and I do not mean her gold.
Is there something wrong with her?
There was a doctor.
So why did you come here?
I've had scenery, yes. But what I want of Europe is people. So far as they are to be had, I want human and personal, and all I can say is I thought there would be more of that in London than any place else.
Do you know anyone here?
No. I knew a London man in New York, but he won't be back.
The salmon is extremely fresh, I believe. Almost raw. Won't you try it?
You don't eat either.
It's to take everything in, isn't it? I must do one thing first, then the other. Let me ask you something. Does Maud know much about you?
No. She just likes us.
I mean you particularly. Has your Susie told her?
Told her what?
Everything.
How could you know? Nobody knows. Ask her.
I might. In the meantime, I shall have the interest in seeing what she does with you. That will teach me more or less how much she knows.
How much does she know about you?
Nothing. But that doesn't matter. It's what she does with me. This, for instance, turning me straight on to you.
And you mean she wouldn't if she did know?
No. I believe, to do her justice, she still would. So you can be easy.
Because you're even at the worst. The best thing she has?
I was till you came. You're the best now. You're a success. That's what it comes to. And this is what it is to be a success. It always happens before one could know it. One's ignorance is, in fact, the greatest part of it. All this is nothing, but you'll see everything. You can, you know. Everything you dream of.
This was a joke, coming here. We pressed an electric bell in gaiety, which won't stop. Now, I'm afraid. I don't know how to make it stop.
Well, I insist on the skins off. Everything else French.
We look South Devon.
It's all very well
like
talked
the Riviera.
I don't think of travelling in this country. It's like there's a line round the city and they never
very well
out.
Talking about the suffrage of women.
Do you think it inevitable, Bishop, as the abolition of slavery?
I never before put those two subjects in the same sentence.
Do you hear that bell?
Here comes the venison. It will all be chew.
There's two ways. One, to leave now, quit the city, everything. I see myself for a moment from above. I see myself rise and walk out of this room.
Lily!
Out of the house, down the grand front stoop without waiting for my coat, and I keep walking out onto that cold street. I feel the coldness on my skin like a shock of life, and I keep walking away. No, I'm running, and I'm lost in the night, running, running, but I am alive. And the other way. I stand on the edge of the world, everything before me. How can I renounce it?
Did you want to renounce it?
Can one choose? I know there is no quick escape. This great assault of life, it must be mine. If I have such a short time.
In that case, I am the way.
I will give in to it.
I wish they'd leave the skins on. Would you call this a potato?
Do you always complain about the food?
Always. More wine?
And the corner is turned. Anything may happen. What did you mean, what Mrs. Lauder would do with me?
Oh, she'll get back her money. Nobody here, you know, does anything for nothing.
You think you know everything, don't you? But there are things you don't know.
Things that I don't. With all the pains I take and the way I run about the world to leave nothing unlearnt.
Oh, you are blasé, but not enlightened. Familiar with everything, but you're really conscious of nothing. What it all comes to, of course, is that you have no imagination.
Oh, I've heard that before.
There it is, then. You've heard everything. You've heard me before, of course, in my country, often enough.
But never too often. I hope I shall hear you again and again and again.
And what good, then, has it done you?
Oh, you'll see when you know me.
Most assuredly, I shall never know you.
Oh, there will be much more to come.
I must keep myself out of the question. Everything else may come with him, but never that.
What, then, does Miss Croy have to gain by being here?
Why, to gain your acquaintance.
What's my acquaintance to her? Oh.
Now she knows we're talking about her.
No, she pities me. She understands all this. She's better than all of you. She's beautiful.
Beautiful in character, I see. Is she so? You must tell me about her.
But you know her longer than I. Haven't you seen her for yourself?
No. I've failed with her. It's no use. I don't make her out. And I assure you, I really should like to. So you're wrong, you see, as to our knowing all about each other. There are cases where we break down. I, at any rate, give her up. Up, that is, to you. You must tell me when you know more.
Oh, I make out that she must be difficult, just as I myself must be easy.
Let me be easy. Think of me as a cheap exotic, as long as I can keep myself with you, Lord Mark, in abeyance.
Here comes the moose. Chocolate, relentlessly. How unimaginative.
Did Lord Mark completely take you up?
Of course, it's my vocation.
Well, he thinks he did. He got the idea, and that's enough for him.
Come and drink coffee.
Oh, yes, yes. Leave me.
Actually, he mostly wanted to talk about you. You are much more difficult, whereas I am quite simple.
Well, tell me about your simplicity, if that's what it is. I've been watching you across the table. You float.
Do I?
I want you to tell me everything about you, from the beginning. So you are the last of a grand broken line. All that is left. You with your wild freedom, your black dress and your vivid hair. Well, I'm a nobody from Bayswater compared to that. My story's very small.
But to me, it's like you stepped out of a picture. The wondrous London girl in person. I've read about you in novels. I think somehow I dreaded you.
Why?
No, you're much nicer.
So what do you want to do with this London of mine?
Shop! See it. No, I want to feel it.
Well, the old is disintegrating and the new springs up with no invitation.
Would you show me it? Your London.
You know, we could ride the new escalators in Harrods. You get a glass of sherry if you dare to ride it to the top.
Is that a tugboat?
They pull the barges. The tower looks so pretty.
Will you really not look at the new bridge?
They say it will be a right and fine symbol of our time when it's done. I hate it.
I like the colour of it. Like flesh. Close your eyes, we're going under.
What I like best about London is the light. The silvery blue strangeness.
Is the Thames always such a pond?
It's trickier than it looks.
So you must keep your father, your sister, your nieces and nephews, and your aunt happy. While somehow trying to find some kind of happiness yourself.
I let my aunt keep me prisoner, heroic as I am. But one must admit it is a beautiful cage.
We admire you.
And the cage is so comfortable, one forgets it is a cage.
And is there nobody else?
What do you mean?
Well, there must be someone.
Here's Greenwich. We get off here.
Kate!
I envy you your freedom, Millie.
Sorry, I didn't mean to pry.
No, it's this river. It makes me melancholic. It's relentless.
Is that a palace? It's spectacular.
No, it's the hospital.
And I envy you yours, Kate.
color's perfect for you. Have it.
Really?
Of course.
Here's the silk, madam.
Oh, why always gold or green?
Blue. She wants blue.
Do I?
It's the shock of your hair. That's what people can't get beyond. But once you're through that, it's the eyes. Their blueness tells everything.
Your eyes are so black, one can't see you at all. Blue it is. Choose a hat.
No!
I see you looking at them. Choose one. No, not that one. That one's mine.
No. Would you change places with me? Would you change chances?
You have it. I can't let go of my mourning yet.
Rich as you are, I cannot hate you for it. Well, that must be our last shopping until you promise you will not place the contents of the next shop at my feet.
Champagne truffle?
What can I give you in return?
Tell me about Lord Mark.
Is that all you want?
He left me blank.
Well, it's imperfect. He's difficult to explain. He has, nothing to show, or touch, or prove.
It's as if his value has taken us so great, and yet, on what is that based?
I suppose his value is in his future. You think he's a humbug? He might do great things. On the other hand, it is something of an achievement to be taken so seriously by Aunt Maud. Aunt Maud believes in him. She may often be fantastic, but she knows a humbug.
Has he done anything?
He was in the house on a Tory side. Lost his seat at the first opportunity. That's all he has to point to.
Perhaps he points to nothing that is a sign of his real cleverness.
The one thing the really clever have in common with the really void. Well, he's working Lancaster Gate for all it's worth. Just as no doubt Lancaster Gate is working him.
What do you mean?
Let's get out! Would you stop here? Let's walk in the park. These gardens are my favourite in the whole world. Take my arm.
Explain.
It's simple, really. Everyone who has something to give makes the sharpest possible bargain for it. One must get at least its value in return, of course. I suppose the strangest thing is this may be a happy understanding. People quite like each other in the midst of it.
You mean like Lord Mark and Aunt Maud?
I don't know what he's doing for her. I haven't made it out yet. She is an extraordinary woman.
Because of who she takes up?
Yes.
You, then?
You may ask, what in the world have I got to give? That indeed is what I'm trying to learn. She will get it. Trust her.
And what about me?
Oh, you'll pay 100% right through the nose.
Well, I hope something is to be done with me. If the most remarkable woman in England is to do it, so much the better. You know, it's odd she wants us both at the same time.
Well, it shows she's sincere. She gives way to her feelings, and feelings have distinctly popped up with the advent of her girlhood friend.
Yes, and that mystifies me.
Why?
That Susie doesn't bore more.
Well, she certainly bores me.
Oh, you don't know her.
I see nothing in her, nothing to account for. I don't know why you indulge her.
I know why I like her.
She's nothing to me.
You are brutal.
Am I?
And isn't there a wild beauty to that? A strange grace.
Am I really brutal?
Well, not brutally brutal, but what's the word? Indifferently brutal.
Well, you know I make up my mind. I know what I like.
And how quickly you decide.
With so many dangers, one has to.
Well, it is indeed a remarkable world where there are any precautions against Susie.
The porter got me a newspaper. It's quite sordid. I'm enjoying it immensely.
You ride in the park?
We did a couple of circuits.
Don't get a chill. Oh,
I love this view.
Where did you go?
We walked in the park.
Oh, come in. Oh, put it on the table. No, I'll do it. Thank you. Tea's here, Millie.
Thank you. You know, they even bring treats with the tea. We better take it with lemon. We might get carried away.
We are carried away. There is no doubt of it.
Well, in the course of our circuit round the park, it came out our friends at Lancaster Gate are acquainted with that gentleman connected with the English newspaper. You know, who had been with you in New York.
Who?
What was his name? He came to your house 3 or 4 times. Mr. Densher?
That's a surprise. A chance 1 in 1,000.
Both Maud and Miss Croy know him, I understand, rather well. Oh, I mean, it wasn't me who brought him in, of course. Maud just referred to this young journalist who'd lately gone to New York. Your wonderful country, as she calls it. I recognize Mr. Densher, of course, and without meaning any harm. I didn't say... There wasn't much to say.
I'm Merton Densher, and I am trying desperately to find New York.
And how does one do that, Mr. Densher?
I walk.
And what have you found?
I've found... I like side streets, and that the stretch of Lower Fifth Avenue has a mild and melancholic glamour that I love.
In the summer, after the crowds have left, you wouldn't believe how peaceful it is there.
You know it?
Of course.
You walk?
Always. The first place to feel this city is in your feet, the low rumble and the deep beat of its heart.
Didn't you make him some kind of promise?
Did I?
About visiting him, if you ever came to London.
I don't remember.
You should travel. I would like to show you London in the same way you have shown me New York.
Oh, how have I shown you New York? You've just been in my drawing room a few times.
But often the drawing room holds the whole city. The casual splendour of your whole house, like a happy accident.
Is it?
None of it's for show somehow. It's just for appreciation. Oh, the heavy glories of the London drawing room. All strung up, piece by piece.
The gentleman is still in America. He had a great deal to do there. In fact, I may not have thought of London at all if I thought he was coming back.
I said it hadn't been so long as to make you as yet great friends. Was that right?
It's odd that he should so instantly fit. How small the world is.
You know what struck me, though? Ma didn't say much. Have you heard of him from Kate?
Heard? Not a word. Why should I?
Well, Maud asks me to suggest to you that it may be better not to speak of him. That is, unless Kate speaks to you of him first. But Maud thinks she won't.
Is there something between them?
No, I gather not. But Maud's afraid of something. Or perhaps it might be more correct to say she's afraid of everything.
What, of their liking each other?
My dear child, we move in a labyrinth.
Abysses. I want abysses.
You would never do so dire a thing as to come to London without looking me up.
I envy you your freedom, Millie.
Of course, she would like her niece to marry Lord Mark. Hasn't she told you?
Kate said she didn't know what Maud wanted with Lord Mark, or with her.
Are you all right? You've gone quite pale.
All she has told me is nothing. A drop in the ocean to what she has not told me. So where are we going?
To see my sister. She's quite on another geographic. You won't find her on any social map, that's for sure. Turn the page over and over of the social atlas and read through everywhere, everyone. There, tucked right at the back, you'll need a magnifying glass to see her name, almost not wanting to be found.
He has been here where I am sitting. His eyes have rested on your face. And you have looked beautifully back into his.
We must go over the bridge, for starters. All these separations. What's the matter?
What?
I don't know. You have a strange look. Like you're watching me.
You look so beautiful today.
I'm all edges and corners.
And how well they sit with you.
Go up to the children. They've been waiting for you. They want a story. Bertie's in bed. He's coughing again. This house is too damp, Miss Thiel. The children take a chill. It's easily done.
Light the fires in their room, Marion. I told you.
Coal is coal.
Yes, and you can afford it.
There's 100 things I can afford, Kate, but which one do I choose?
The house is not damp. It's just freezing. Hello? Hello? I'm a bear.
The children love their aunt. She comes and goes. It's always easier to be more delightful when your stay is short.
They sound lovely.
I can hardly hold on to Bertie. And his sister wants... She's like Kate in that way.
The two little ones hardly know anything. And then there's this man. This man who could break everything to pieces.
I beg your pardon?
This person in love with my sister. If you care for Kate, do you care for Kate?
Of course.
It would be quite too dreadful. One must do something.
Pardon?
You must prevent anything coming
of
it.
What?
Mr. Densher and Kate. She hasn't spoken of it.
No.
You must look after my sister. Don't say a word of it to Kate that I've spoken.
Is this man so dreadful?
He is poor as poverty, and I know what that is. It's what my aunt thinks. She won't hear of him. He won't either be a public man or a rich one. If he was public, Aunt Maud might help him. If he were rich, she would swallow him whole. But as it is, she taboos him.
You all think so tremendously of money.
It comes as a subject of indifference easier to some people than others.
Marion, the baby wants you.
Would you please excuse me? Have you made her cry now?
No, Bertie bumped her. He didn't mean to. We were doing donkey rides.
I wait. You keep me waiting. I hate this, my small, shabby questions. My face in the mirror. I want to run away. I don't know what I want to do. I can feel you upstairs, knowing him. And still you don't speak. Do you love him? Do I? Only the future running back towards us will tell.
In part one of The Wings of the Dove, Kate was played by Lindsay Marshall, Merton by Blake Ritson, and Millie by Anna Maxwell Martin. Lord Mark was played by Toby Jones, and Aunt Maud by Claire Higgins. Susie was Barbara Barnes, Marion Deborah McAndrew, and Croy Jonathan Keeble. The Wings of the Dove was written by Henry James, dramatised by Linda Marshall Griffiths, and directed by Nadia Molinari. And you can hear what happens when Merton returns to London and Kate engineers a meeting with Millie in the second part at the same time tomorrow. We're asking you to help us tell a story this autumn. Here's how it begins.
Chain Gang. Episode 1 by Robert Shearman.
So, you've both been on holiday then?
Yes, we have.
Yes.
I thought so. From all the luggage. And that you're wearing shorts. And that I picked you up from the airport.
Yes, that would be the giveaway.
Sally, sweetheart, before we get home, before the holiday's over, there's something I want to ask you.
Oh, not now, Mark. I'm really tired.
No, I know.
That kid was kicking the back of my seat the whole bloody flight.
I'd just like to get
never
out of the way.
Never kick your seat, I noticed. Just mine.
Will you marry me? I'd get down on one knee, but it's hard to do on the back seat.
You're asking me here?
Yeah.
We've just been in Paris. You could have asked me up the Eiffel Tower or at the Louvre.
I got nervous.
So you're proposing in a taxi cab?
I even got a ring. I'd give it to you now, but it's in the boot. With all the other luggage. I'm sorry.
Thing is, I don't like picking people up from airports.
No?
Well, on the way to the airport, yes, everything's fine. Everyone's happy then. Full of excitement. But on the way back, different story, isn't it? All the fun's over. They've got real life stretching out ahead of them. Depressing.
Oh, I think we've missed the turning. Excuse me? You've missed the... Oh, for heaven's sake.
And they never tip.
Sally, what do you think?
Oh, Mark. I don't know. It's a big step.
Well, yeah, that's sort of the point.
I don't think you know me well enough. There are whole things about me you can't even guess.
I know you snore in bed. I know you leave the cap off the toothpaste.
Seriously. You have no idea.
So is it a no?
It's a don't know. Okay? We'll see. Okay. Now he's missed the other turning. The turning to get us back to the last turning.
I just thought going back to real...
Hey! Excuse me. You're going in the wrong direction.
Stretching ahead. I mean, if we got married, I wouldn't mind.
Would you turn the car around, please? This isn't where we're meant...
Don't you worry. It'll all be all right.
Where are you taking us?
You have business to attend to.
What's going on?
Now just relax. Settle back. Imagine that I'm stronger than the pair of you. Imagine I'm trying to defend myself. Imagine I might even have a weapon here someplace.
Sally, what do I do?
It'll be all right.
It'll be all right. Enjoy the ride. It'll be over soon.
So if you have an idea for taking the story forward, check out bbc.co.uk/radio4extra and follow the links from there. We'll need your storyline by 8 on Thursday morning. Right, I'll hand you over to Mel now, and I'll be back at 5 with an hour of comedy, including Hugh Bonneville, in the comedy of parallel universes, Married, at 5:30.
Hello there, and a very warm welcome to another 4 o'clock show with me, Mel Gedroych, and... Boy, oh boy, have we got a show for you today. Look, seriously, I know there are other shows. Yeah, there are lots of other shows. I shouldn't have favourites, but my own is really a star-studded cracker. First of all, we've got a brand new story. And as if sixth grade in an American school isn't hard enough, oh, imagine all the cheerleading, there's something very fishy about Susan Simmons' new substitute teacher.
The fight hadn't even gone on more than 10 seconds when a tall blonde man came through the crowd. He grabbed the two fighters and hauled them to their feet. Wow, I thought, when I saw him lift the two of them right off the ground. That guy is really strong.
Oh, you'll never guess what his secret is. There is a clue, though, in the title of the book, which is called My Teacher's an Alien. Bit of a clue. Written by Bruce Coville and read for us by Hollywood's Lisa Bonet, it's our story this week, which also happens to be World Space Week. And we've got another star on the show. Oh my days. He is gorgeous. He's Dylan, the three-banded armadillo from Edinburgh Zoo. I'm telling you, it was love.
He's curled in a ball. Yes. Oh, adorable.
It's really a good feel. I mean, it's really, you can tap it as well. It's really,
that
really
is extraordinary. It's like armour. He's an armoured dillo, isn't he? And being a Monday on the 4 o'clock show, we've got our regular nature feature, The Luscious, A Guide to Farmland Birds. Today, we hear the birds on winter pastures. But first, oh yeah, it's time for my magical mystery tour. Right, imagine we're all together on a bus. Yeah, I know, the slightly wilder ones are at the back, having a bundle. Yes, I know. Well, actually, we're going to need more than a bus today. We're off on a journey. I know the destination. I drop the clues throughout the show. Your job is to work out where we're going. And remember, we could be going anywhere at any time. And we arrive just before the story. First clue for today, I've always been very curious about this place. The music's a clue too. Where, oh where, oh where could we possibly be going? This year is Edinburgh Zoo's 100th anniversary. We, on the 4 o'clock show, were very keen to celebrate this milestone, so I went, along with my daughter Floss, to meet some of the animals. I'm smiling, actually, as I say it, because we had such a brilliant day. Over the next few days, you're going to hear how we got on with the penguins, meerkats, lemurs, yep, we met them all, and of course, the giant pandas, who we didn't actually meet, but more about that later. We begin with A for armadillo. His name is Dylan. I'm in love with him. And he's a three-banded armadillo. Our guide is Edinburgh Zoo's senior animal presenter, Erica Alton.
Like all our animals this morning, he's sleeping. And he sleeps in amongst all this newspaper and straw. And he's got a nice wee outside bit as well that he can go into. But he really buries himself right deep in amongst all this in here. Here he comes.
Where does he come from? Oh, look. He's curled in a ball. Oh, adorable.
He's quite green, isn't he?
He's kind of brownish. Yeah, he probably looks a wee bit strange because of the lighting in here.
Feel the shell, Floss.
Yeah, really good feel. I mean, it's really, you can tap it as well. It's really hard. It's extraordinary.
It's like armour. He's an armoured dillo, isn't he?
And he's got three bands, so you can see these bands here. But they allow him to curl up perfectly, and you can see how he can fold in his ears, pull in his legs, and then his tail goes perfectly together with his head.
He looks quite neat.
There we go.
He looks quite like a woodlouse.
Yeah, like a giant woodlouse.
Yeah.
Are you all right with that, Floss?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
She doesn't like woodlice very much.
Yeah.
And are these sort of hairs poking out? Bits of hair. Where do they come from?
His belly's all covered in hair, and that's to protect him, because if he's eaten ants and termites,